Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the FT Advisor podcast and the first edition of 2021. Happy New Year. I'm Damian Fantato, the digital editor of FT Advisor. Last year was a bit of an experience, which has changed many aspects of life, such as shopping, meeting friends and family, and providing financial advice. And of course, the fact that this podcast is still being recorded remotely. So I'm joined by FT Advisor's crack team of reporters to discuss what 2021 might have in store. Joining me are Imogen Tu, Amy Austin, Rachel Mortimer, and Chloe Chung. So before we get going, I took a quick moment to have a look at last year's podcast of looking into 2020. And how many of you think that coronavirus was mentioned once?
Oh, dear. I don't think we even knew it existed, did we?
Yep, you're absolutely correct. It wasn't mentioned a single time, which goes to show how much of a successful prediction exercise this podcast
is. None of this is going to happen.
It was a twinkle in our eye.
On that basis, let's get cracking trying to predict what's going to happen in 2021. Imogen, we'll start with you. One of the big topics of 2020 has been property funds yet again. And that's something that you think is going to be a bit of an issue during 2021 as well, don't you?
Yeah, so I think one of the most interesting things to kind of look out for in 2021 will be just how the property fund market fares, really. They're facing a bit of a perfect storm at the turn of the year. They were all suspended from March until September and have gradually started reopening since. Many are invested in the retail and office space, which investors are cautious about at the moment, given the kind of working from home and online trends caused by COVID. They're expected to continue past the crisis. So you're facing funds that are suspended and they're invested in areas that investors might not be too confident about. And then on top of that, you have the FCA mulling its kind of 180-day rule. So it's not certain that this will come in yet, but all things are kind of pointing in the right direction that the FCA will go for this rule. This will mean that investors will have to put in a redemption request and then wait 6 months to get their money back. So this will be a really key area to watch, really. In terms of how popular they'll be next year, I think on the investor front, it depends on whether they think the office and retail space will make a comeback or if they buy into the fact that property funds can kind of capitalize on any new trends within commercial property. For instance, kind of infrastructure, industrial logistics, a number of fund managers have been kind of re-nosing their portfolios to that sector. So if they kind of back that, then maybe. In terms of advisors, I think it depends on how seamlessly they can put property funds with a 6 month redemption period into their centralized investment propositions or how well platforms can deal with the wait. Many people have kind of said, oh no, they're not gonna be able to deal with it. But I mean, they've been dealing with suspended funds for a year and before as well. So we shall see really whether property funds remain a popular part of a portfolio.
Yeah, this has been an issue going back to 2016, if not further. More generally speaking, are people expecting from the market? So we know this is usually a good time of the year when people start predicting what's going to be happening. What do you hear?
Yeah, sure. So obviously it's been a pretty horrific year for markets, or at least kind of they had a horrific time in the initial crashes caused by the coronavirus. In terms of equities next year, I think it's pretty safe to say that we will see markets that have been worst hit by the pandemic benefit most from any global recovery. So the US markets are kind of up year to date, despite the crashes in March. So probably won't see them kind of soar once global economic markets recover. But places like the UK and Europe, we might see kind of an actual really good turnaround in those places. This also links to kind of a value growth turnaround of sorts. I mean, it's been touted for more than a decade now that value is going to come back in favor soon. And one day, you know, it actually might. But typically value stocks do well when economic growth is strong. and they do really well during that period. So although it wouldn't be wise to kind of back value completely, I imagine that our analysts are saying at the moment that it's good to have a little bit of value in your portfolio, because when it does well, it does really, really well. So it'd be good to have something there for whenever that economic recovery does happen. I mentioned the US briefly, and it's a bit crass to kind of brand the US market as solely technology stocks, but they have been the driving force of the US market. So it's important to mention tech is unlikely to die down anytime soon. It's become kind of part of our makeup, even more so since COVID, but it's probably likely to slow down a little bit. Now, it's not all about equities, though. And so in terms of bonds, I think government yields are predicted to stay historically low throughout the year. I'd actually just personally predict that we might see investors move away from government bonds quite a lot. They no longer provide that kind of diversification cushion that they so regularly have played that part in a portfolio, because yields are so low that, I mean, if there was any kind of crisis, where are they going to go? So they're probably not going to provide that bounce. Corporate bonds is a bit of a different story, though. Thanks to government support around the world, there has been kind of little in terms of defaults of corporate bonds, and they're providing pretty steady and good income at a time when income has kind of dried up. So, yeah, well, I reckon we'll see the UK and Europe prosper on any economic turnaround, and corporate bonds is the place to go for income.
We're going to hold you to every single one of those predictions.
this time next year.
And we ended last year with quite a bit of activity on the platform acquisition front. So there's Novia was bought last month by a private equity firm. There was a lot of speculation about Nucleus as well. Some people came in and out for that. James Heywood as well. You expect that's going to continue?
I do, yeah, you're absolutely right. The platform space was dominated by mergers and acquisitions in 2020. So, I do think that we will see more of this happen. I think it's kind of taken as true that it's cost pressures that drive mergers and acquisitions in the platform space. It's increasingly like a scale game. So the larger your platform is, obviously, that if you've got thin margins, the larger you need to be in order to make those margins kind of profitable. And we've seen cost pressure increase over the past 2 years, which I think has driven this trend. And I mean, we're not looking at kind of fees getting any higher anytime soon. So, yeah, I do think we will continue to see M&A in the platform space as people want to scale up in order to kind of just stay alive, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of M&A, that provides me with an opportunity to seamlessly segue into our friend Rachel Mortimer. In the advice market, there's M&A has been something that has just been going on for quite a while. Did the crisis have much of an impact on that? And is there going to be a hangover going into 2021?
So I think there were the firms that pulled back from the pipeline of deals and the market slightly when the crisis hit. It was sort of batten down the hatches and look after the clients and the assets that you had at the time. However, I don't think the pandemic had quite the dampening effect that was first predicted on deal activity. You had quite a few smaller IFA deals go sort of ticking along in the background throughout the year, and also some bigger names such as Fairstone was very active in the M&A space, as was the relatively new entrant consolidator Independent Wealth Planners and the likes of Kingswood. So certainly there was sort of a decent amount of activity going on. Partly that's down to the fact that a lot of deals were already in motion before the pandemic hit. So whilst it may have taken a little bit longer to get it across the line, certainly they were sure to happen at some point in the year anyway. And also some of the biggest driving factors behind why principals put their businesses up for sale in the first place, such as an aging advisor population and rising regulatory costs and a hardening PI market, are still very much there and still very much factors in sellers coming to market. So that didn't change. And there was also plenty of demand from the buy side as well, both from consolidators and bigger advice players that are already in the market, but also we know that private equity buyers are increasingly interested in advice firms and see them as a real source of recurring income and a good business model.
Mm-hmm. And we ended last year with the FCA's paper on the RDR and the advice market. What do you think we're likely to see in 2021?
So, yeah, you're right. It was long awaited, that paper. There'd been a couple of delays behind it. And also the FCA has just finished its consultation period for the call for input on consumer advice. And the businesses in that industry are certainly going to be under scrutiny next year. Not necessarily scrutiny in a bad way, but scope for innovation and improvement. And innovation was actually one of the biggest sort of buzzwords in the FCA's review of the advice market. They wanted to see more of it. There were concerns of price clustering and a lack of competition. It did admit that the industry has come a long way in the years since those rules were first brought into place. But they were very much of the opinion that there was more work to be done. And one of the bigger things that they highlighted in that paper was a focus on robo-advice. As we all know, robo-advisors have struggled to sort of make a profit in the last couple of years. And the FCA acknowledged that, but very much sees it as a potential answer to improving the uptake of advice with perhaps less affluent consumers. However, the industry has sort of fought back at that slightly and said, yes, whilst obviously we'd like to access more consumers, and the more the better, especially in the wake of the crisis when we know that more and more people are seeking financial advice. One of their biggest sort of bugbears is actually to innovate and to shake up pricing requires cost on our part, and we're already seeing the pressure of rising regulatory costs and PI premiums, and there's not much room for movement there. So that was probably one of the biggest concerns that was flagged as a potential stumbling block to innovation in that area next year, this year.
Mm-hmm. And are there two or three things that are likely to be at the top of the industry's wish list?
I mean, as mentioned, we couldn't go into the first podcast of this year without mentioning the campaign for lower FSCS fees and a more accessible professional indemnity market. That has been increasingly at the top of advisors' wish list last year, and I can imagine also this year as well. Although, I mean, the additional FSCS supplementary levy that was slapped on the advice market a few months ago suggested that those calls weren't necessarily being answered, but we can only hope. Also, a huge sort of push behind scam campaigns and a need for greater awareness and securities and consumer protection put in place to protect the most vulnerable from financial harm and scams. That was very much a theme which professional bodies like PIMFA and the PFS got behind last year. And I know many advisors who share that same cause. So yeah, that's another one that I think, and as is the FCA. So yeah, another one that I think we'll see a lot more of this year.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of wish lists, for many people, it's a wish list to get onto the property ladder, and the mortgage market has been in a bit of a state of flux over last year. One of the issues that I suppose is outstanding for 2021 is the state of stamp duty and how that's going to affect the mortgage market. Chloe, I'm bringing you in at this point. What are you hearing? What do you think?
Yeah, as mortgage brokers will know, the stamp duty holiday and the equivalents in Scotland and Wales will be coming to an end on the 31st of March. If you look back at the past couple of house price indices from Nationwide, you've got headline figures like annual house price growth reaching five-year highs with the stamp duty holiday playing its part. But it also comes with a warning that activity could slow, especially when the stamp duty holiday ends. The Intermediary Mortgage Lenders Association has also warned that demand could fall immediately after the stamp duty holiday deadline. But they've also mentioned the five-year anniversary of the stamp duty surcharge that came into effect on the 1st of April 2016. So where you usually pay an extra 3% if you're going to be owning multiple residential properties. If you look back at data from HMRC, it shows that transactions peaked in March 2016 before that surcharge was introduced. And there was coverage 4 years ago about landlords rushing to beat the surcharge. If those landlords took out a 5-year fixed rate mortgage, there's an opportunity for remortgage business there. So although we could see property purchases drop when the stamp duty holiday ends, to an extent this might be balanced by those landlords looking to remortgage. So it's like you've got one stamp duty change coming to an end, but you've got the influence of another stamp duty change from 5 years ago having a recurring effect.
Mm-hmm. I suppose it's been a bit of a year of flux for the mortgage market, generally speaking. You've had, particularly at the 90%, 95% end of things, you've had providers coming in and out and in and out. Do you think that's likely to continue?
I think when the stamp duty holiday ends, demand falls away. That should help with service levels. I think lenders have been coming in and out because of the service levels. If that is no longer an issue, then hopefully there will be a more consistent offering.
Interesting. One area where there's also likely to be, or rumoured to be, tax changes is around pensions. I'm hitting all the marks with my segues in this episode. And I'll use this opportunity to bring in Amy. There are constantly rumours about changes to pension tax. What do you think our chances are this year?
This is the question about every year, and every year everyone's like, right, tax relief will definitely happen this year, you know, we're definitely going to see changes. And every year at budget I'm sat there sweating, waiting to write my articles, and nothing comes along. So I want to be optimistic and say there will be changes due to COVID and the debt having to be paid off, but at the same time I feel like it might be pushed on for later years to, you know, give people the chance to come out of COVID and not be ambushed with loads of tax changes that they then have to, you know, understand. And also it's not just for, you know, clients, it's for advisors as well. You have to realise, you know, that they have to get their head around it. Pensions tax is not an easy thing to understand. And, you know, it's, if there's more and more and more changes, like every year it feels like they're catching up. And just when they think they've got it, bam, changes, and they've got to, you know, change everything along with it. We could see it, we couldn't, but I think if it's going to be anything, you know, higher rate pensions tax relief is going to be in their sights. You know, there's talks that it could go down to 25%, talks it could be 20 or 30, like who knows what number they're going to pluck out. But what we do know is that there are many people who are against it. It probably will not be welcomed, especially among mainly advisor clients who will, you know, who we know who are mainly wealthy. So I can't see them being very happy. But industry experts I've spoken to have previously said to me, if there were going to be changes in this area, it needs to be, you know, really well thought out and thought of every single like consequence of this change, not like, oh, whoops, this is what's happened because of this, and we didn't think that that would happen. Kind of like what's happened with the taper, you know, it was introduced and now we have these raft of issues, and people said, you know, it should just be scrapped because we don't need it. So we kind of want to avoid another situation like that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And one of the other areas that there's been a trend in, certainly has been the growth in SASSes, which is small self-administered schemes, isn't
very
it?
Very well done.
excellent. I'll give myself a prize later. And why do you think that is? There has been that growth in popularity there. Is that likely to continue into 2021?
Yeah, the people I've spoken to have said, you know, they do think 2021 will be the year of the SaaS, mainly due to their loan back feature. People, you know, are enjoying it. And even back last year in April, some providers saw the number of loan backs being completed in SASSes like more than quadruple, which is, you know, kind of never been seen before. And lots of people were coming to providers like advisors saying, oh, you know, we want to set up a SASS for our clients, you know, something they're looking to do, you know, where normally it would kind of be a SIP if people are looking to invest and do this sort of thing. Because obviously SASSs and SIPs are similar in the way that they can do property purchases. But SASS is the only thing that has this loan back feature, which businesses tend to like. So I do think that we will be seeing, you know, more of these, but then that obviously comes with its problems, because we have seen before that, you know, SASSs just can't be set up on a whim. They have to be registered with HMRC, and this can take time. Last year and the year before, I believe, there were, you know, cases that were taking months. So it has gone down to weeks now, which is where it kind of should be. But if there is, you know, an influx of people looking to move to this pension scheme, then it may be that this time goes up again and advisors will not be very happy, because, you know, if you want to do a property purchase or a loan back, it needs to be a quickish turnaround, you know, otherwise you might lose out on this property, or, you know, you need this loan for your business. And if you're sitting there waiting for a SASS, it's not great.
And any thoughts about what's going to happen in the SIP market?
I mean, the SIP market will still be busy. You know, there's still a lot going on. There's still cases rumbling on. You know, the Kerry case is scheduled for its appeal in March. So we still have that to look forward to. Whether anything will change, who knows? You know, will there be new evidence? Will there be new arguments? Will different judges see it in a different light? We don't know yet. But I guess the industry will welcome clarity in this area. Hopefully as well, there'll be, you know, less SIP providers going into default on the back of claims. So yeah, last year we did see still a number of SIP providers going into default. Hopefully this will not be the same for this year, you know, with all of these claims and advisors having to pay out for them. However, one area where the FCA has kind of shifted its focus into more, you know, international advisors, international SIPs, and this seems to be a trend that's coming up. So maybe all is not free in the SIP market as of yet.
Great. Well, thank you, Amy. Well, that's very interesting. Lots to look forward to there in 2021. It's just a shame that it's all going to be derailed by the inevitable plague of locusts, or the water turning to blood, or darkness for 3 days, or some other biblical plague that is going to hit us in about mid-March, I think, is when these things traditionally hit us. Thank you very much to Imogen, Amy, Chloe, and Rachel. And thank you very much to you for listening, and tune in again next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.